So we're going to read from God's Word, the Bible, now. As I say, we're beginning a new series in the book of Daniel. This is several hundred years before Jesus, and it's during a time when the people of Israel were in Babylon. So they weren't in their homeland anymore. They were captives in a foreign land. They were captives in Babylon. And so we're going to see tales of great courage by different characters in this book, Daniel and others. So let's read from verse 1. We'll read this whole chapter together. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, that's Israel, one of Israel's kings, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men, in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace and whom they might teach the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. That's another name for the Babylonians. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, and to Azariah, Abednego. So Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, "Please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance be examined before you, and the appearance of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies. And as you see fit, so deal with your servants." So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, their features appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. Thus the steward took away their portion of the delicacies and the wine that they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these 4 young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days when the king had said that they should be brought in to the chief of the eunuchs, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus. The feeling that dropped out a little bit of the story, but I'll take you through the story as we go through it. There was a little section which dropped out, but we won't go back. I'll take you through it. So let's have a look at that passage. During my days as a uni student, I had to earn money over the summer break, and I had a bunch of different summer jobs. And one of the things that I noticed was that, okay, depending on the environment, there could be a strong pressure to act in certain ways. So, for example, over one summer, I worked at a health food shop, and the culture there was that if you had a fair bit of cheese on your sandwich, you just were not such a good citizen, basically. And if ever you were seen eating a 30-cent McDonald's ice cream, just for example, from the other side of the food court, you were definitely not such a good citizen. Even if you had an apple in your other hand to make up for your sin, you were still not such a good citizen. Okay, there was this pressure to conform to a certain norm. Now, interestingly, this was very different to other workplaces that I found myself in. Okay, when I did rock melon picking out in the country, there were a whole bunch of backpackers. And the pressure there, it certainly wasn't a kind of a pressure to be super health conscious. The pressure that you actually really felt there was the pressure to smoke. Just everybody, it seemed, smoked. And so if you weren't a smoker, you really did feel very, very odd in that environment. The pressure was certainly there. And so depending on the environment that you were in, there were definite pressures to act in a certain way in order to fit in. Now, your experiences are probably different to mine, but I think all of us here would know what it is to experience the pressure to actually fit in. And that's the sort of thing that's going on in the passage that we're looking at tonight. Okay, as I say, we're looking at a new series tonight. What we're looking at is Daniel chapters 1 through to 6. And what we have here is a situation where Daniel and his friends, they've got to make a choice. Are we going to fit in? How important is it to me that I do fit in? See, Daniel and his friends throughout this book are faced with a stark choice. Do I go with the flow and enjoy the good life? Because they were enjoying the good life. Or do I risk everything and follow the Lord? That's the choice that they faced. And the story of Daniel is the story of the way that God delivers them as they make the hard choices of following him. So let's look at chapter 1 under four headings. Firstly, power, in verses 1 and 2. Okay, the world that Daniel and his friends are in at this time is one where the world around them really does seem immensely powerful. And where the God of the Bible seems like he holds no sway whatsoever. Okay, in verses 1 and 2, we're told that at this time, God's people have been taken away to Babylon. Now, Babylon was the great empire of the day. It was a place of human might and human accomplishment. In fact, you'll notice that in verse 2, it's described there as the land of Shinar. Now, Shinar, you probably aren't aware, but if you do know your Bible history, that was the place where a great tower was built, a tower called the Tower of Babel. Okay, think Babylon, Babel, the Tower of Babel. It was a tower that the people built in rebellion against God. It was a tower where they were trying to make a name for themselves, the Bible says, and where they were imagining that they could actually make their own way up to heaven without God. See, Shinar, it's this place of human arrogance. And Babylon, in the land of Shinar, represents all of that. And friends, at this time in human history, Babylon is at its most arrogant. It is at its most arrogant because it's actually doing very, very well. See, Babylon at this time, it's been incredibly successful. It's the great empire of the day. It's been rapidly conquering the nations round about. And although the Bible clearly tells us that God allowed the children of Israel to be carried away to Babylon because of their sin, because they'd been rebelling against him, yet to the average bystander in that day, it seemed very much like the Babylonian gods had flexed their muscle and the God of the Bible had given in. Okay, notice in verse 2 that Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had brought treasures from the house of God in Israel into the house of his God. See, it seemed like Babylon had all of the power in the world, and that even the gods of Babylon were stronger than the gods of the Bible. And so that's the situation that Daniel and their friends find themselves in. Daniel is a captive in Babylon, this incredibly powerful empire. And as such, if someone was giving Daniel and his friends a bit of advice at the moment, their advice would probably be, Daniel, do what you're told. Stay out of trouble. Just fit in. That's the kind of advice most people would give Daniel in this circumstance right now. Friends, I don't know if you ever feel that way, but certainly I think it's a temptation for us today. I mean, isn't it true that today, more and more, if you want to follow Jesus, I mean, you are being made to feel like you're on the outer. I don't know if any of you have ever read the book, The Case for Christ. It's a great book if you haven't. There's also a movie just came out, I think last year or the year before. But it's the story of how an investigative journalist, Lee Strobel, he actually looks into the case for Christianity, but not as a believer, as an unbeliever. He's wanting to disprove Christianity. And through actually looking into it, he becomes a Christian. And in the end, Strobel wants to write a newspaper article for the Chicago Tribune. That's where he works, is this well-known reporter. He wants to write an article for the Chicago Tribune about the things that he's discovered. And he's told, absolutely not. That will just ruin the credibility of our newspaper. And friends, that was back in the 1980s, let alone today. See, the powers that be don't want you to follow Christ. If you want to get ahead, if you want to be thought well of, the message that you will receive, whether it's said or whether it's unsaid, is don't rock the boat, don't talk about Jesus or his teachings, just fit in. Daniel and his friends were up against significant power. And this power had a strategy. Okay, where one nation takes over another nation, you've got to work out how you're going to deal with those people that have been taken over. How are you going to keep this new people in line? Well, there are different strategies that have been used in history. One of the strategies is to suppress the subject nation, just treat them horribly, turn them into slaves and so on. That was kind of how Israel ended up being treated in Egypt, right? And so suppress them, let them know that if they step out of line, they're in real trouble. That's one strategy. But it's not the only strategy that you can use, because another way that you can try to get this new people to do what you want is actually to treat them really, really well. Give them privileges. Give them money. Bring them into high positions, or at least some of them into high positions. Let them know that they can do very, very well in this new country as long as they assimilate. As long as they become one of us, as long as they toe the line. See, you don't have to get people to do what you want by stomping on them. That can be one technique. But you can also try being very, very nice. And that's actually what's going on here. Now, it's not that Babylon doesn't know how to stomp on people. They're pretty good at that too. As we're going to see, Daniel will end up in a lion's den when he doesn't toe the line. They would stomp on you if you didn't do what you were told. But the policy here is you just fit in and we'll treat you very, very nicely. And so you see in these verses that the king actually calls for some young men from the children of Israel. The word probably implies that they were quite young. We're talking here about teenagers, okay? We think probably around the age of 15, right? And they're brought into the palace and able to serve in the very palace itself. This was an enormous privilege, okay? How many Babylonians would have loved the privilege of serving in the king's palace? And yet a few Israelite teenagers, Daniel and his friends, are brought into these positions. This is amazing. But the catch is, you've got to assimilate. You've got to be ready to fit in. And they make this very clear. So you see in verse 6, they re-educate them. They teach them the language and the literature of the Chaldeans. That's another word for the Babylonians. They would have learned things like maths and medicine and astronomy, as well as dream interpretation and astrology and Babylonian mythical texts and so on. They re-educate them. And they also get them used to Babylonian ways, even food that you eat in the royal court. Verse 5, and the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies, of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of the time they might serve before the king. They learn Babylonian ways. And even more than this, they're even given new names. Babylonian names rather than Hebrew names, the names that they have, because their names reflected their allegiance to their God. Okay, we're told in verse 7, he gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, Meshach, to Azariah, Abednego. Okay, this is their way of trying to encourage them to forget their God. For example, the letters EL in the name Daniel actually come from the Hebrew word Elohim, meaning God. But now he's given the name Belteshazzar, and the beginning part of that is probably a reference to the Babylonian god Belet. And so even in the names that they're given, they're being told you've got to fit in. That's the strategy of this powerful country. Get others to fit in, treat them nicely if you have to, get some of the teenage guys to serve the king, but make sure they fit in. And you know, the temptation for us, I mean, is to do exactly that, isn't it? Just fit in. Okay, isn't it true that the pressure at work or maybe at school is exactly that? Just laugh at certain kinds of jokes. Use certain kinds of language. Gossip about people that don't quite fit the mold. Pursue all of the same values in the workplace as everyone else. It's a pressure to adopt the values of the world around us. Okay, I mentioned workplaces earlier. There was another workplace I had during my uni days. I had so many. It's not that I was a bad worker. I just, different summers, I did different things. This one was a much more, it was a manual labouring sort of a job. And interestingly, the pressure that you felt there, among the blokes anyway, was to steal the company dark safety glasses, okay? The dark safety glasses actually doubled really, really well as sunglasses. And the culture there was that you would quietly grab a pair, even if you weren't actually working outside, which was when you were meant to have a pair of the dark. They were dark safety glasses, but as I say, they looked just like sunnies. And there was this kind of low-level expectation that if you were one of the blokes, that's what you did, right? Just fit in. And that's very much the strategy of the Babylonians. Fit in. But you know, what you meet here from Daniel and his friends is resistance. Okay, in verses 8 through to 16, Daniel makes a stand. Now, interestingly, Daniel, he doesn't just wholesale get out of the system. He doesn't resist working for the Babylonians. He doesn't say no to their education. No doubt he evaluates it critically, but he doesn't just wholesale say no to it. He doesn't even refuse the name that they give him. He doesn't pull out of all of that. He doesn't wholesale reject the system. But what you do see is he makes a stand. Daniel is, he's worried about the obvious program of assimilation, and he decides, I'm going to resist. And so he asks to have certain foods, asks not to have to eat certain foods that are given to him. Now, some people have suggested that this is to do with the Jewish dietary laws. The Jews weren't allowed to eat certain meats, and so he just decides, for the sake of ease, to withdraw from all meat. Maybe it might have had something to do with that. I think it's quite possible it had something to do with that. But interestingly, he also says no to wine here as well, which wasn't prohibited in the Jewish dietary system. And so I do think there's more that's going on here than that. I think what's actually going on is Daniel is making a conscious decision that he's going to do something to make sure that he doesn't just get sucked into the Babylonian way of life. Okay, Daniel's worked out what they're trying to do. It's obvious that they're trying to assimilate him. And so Daniel decides to be clear from the outset, I'm not just going to assimilate. The vegetarian diet stops him from eating meats that are against his conscience, and the choice not to drink wine, it says very, very clearly that I won't be getting into the decadence of the palace lifestyle. Daniel is determined not to take on everything in the world around him. Now, friends, it's a big risk in Daniel's decision. Big risk in Daniel's decision. First person that he talked to, the chief of the eunuchs, was worried that he wouldn't look as healthy as the others, and that this different diet would be found out, and that the chief eunuch would lose his head for disobeying the order of the king. That was the part that I think somehow got missed out in the story up there. But there was this risk in Daniel taking this decision. But Daniel wanted to honour the Lord. He wasn't just going to become like the Babylonians. And friends, you've got to decide whether or not you're just going to be like the world around you, or whether you're going to resist it. Okay, the world around you is powerful. You've got to realise that. And it definitely is easiest, isn't it, to just go with the flow. It's easiest to just live like everyone else, to just speak white lies like everyone else, to sleep around, to live for stuff, to live for pleasure, to hide your faith. That just seems like it's the easiest way to go with the flow. But in the end, you've got to decide what's most important to you. Is it more important to you to be comfortable in this life, or is it more important to you to follow Christ? Okay, Jesus said, whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. And you've got to actually decide whether or not you're going to follow Christ. And if so, will you follow Christ even when it means you don't fit in? Daniel loved the Lord more than anything else, and that meant that he would never fully fit in with the world. Do you love God that way? Do you love God that way? This was Daniel's resistance. And then finally, we come to Daniel's deliverance. And we see this here in the way that God delivered Daniel from this really tricky situation. Okay, as I say, what Daniel decided to do was really dangerous. When he talks to the person who's in charge of him, the person originally expressed real concern. We read in verse 10, "And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, 'I fear my lord the king, who has appointed your food and drink, for why should he see your faces looking worse than the young men who are your age? Then you would endanger my head before the king.'" I love that phrase. "Then you would endanger my head before the king." Okay, the chief eunuch is worried that on a vegetarian diet, Daniel won't look as healthy. Which by that he means fat, by the way. That's basically what he means. They wanted them to look a little bit well-rounded. And so he's worried on a vegetarian diet, you might not look as healthy. And when word gets out that he hasn't been on the same diet, he's going to be in big trouble. It's a dangerous thing to do. And yet Daniel very graciously, okay, he's not bombastic, but he very graciously, not abrasively, stands his ground. And he goes and talks to the steward of the chief of eunuchs. And he suggests a 10-day test. And in the end, after the 10-day test, Daniel and his friends are actually looking better, which means fatter, than all of the rest. Now, what's going on here? Well, what's going on here is that God delivers Daniel and his friends. Okay, the lesson that you're meant to learn here is not that vegetarianism is the way to go, which I'm very thankful for. The point here is that God has delivered. That's the point. As I say, almost certainly looking healthy meant being more plump. And that just wasn't likely to happen on a vegetarian diet. But God, the true God, unlike the Babylonian gods, God, the true God, overrules and causes Daniel and his friends to look more fulsome than any of the others on the higher calorie diet. And in addition to that, God gave them great knowledge so that they really stood out among the wise men. God delivers them. Okay, look at the way that this point is made. Verse 9. "Now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs." Verse 17. "As for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams." See, God, he was delivering. You know, Nebuchadnezzar the king, he seemed like he'd won the day, didn't he? And the God of the Babylonians, they seemed like they'd won the day. But the point here is that God was quietly delivering his people. That's the point. This is why the chapter ends in the way that it does. Look at verse 21, the final verse in the chapter, and check out the way that this ends. It's subtle, but it's definitely saying something. Okay, it ends in this way. "Thus Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus." Now, that seems like a weird thing to say there. King Cyrus isn't going to come for decades. Why is he mentioned here? Well, he's mentioned here because King Cyrus will be the king of the Persians that actually defeats the Babylonians. And it will be through Cyrus that the Israelites end up going home. Daniel is actually going to outlive the Babylonian Empire. God is going to deliver his people. See, God is a delivering God. God rescues his people. God saves his people. And you need to know that he is ready to rescue you. You know, it's hard making choices to go against the flow. This world seems powerful. It might seem like you won't have as many friends. It might seem like you won't get as far in life. But the promise of the Bible is that for those who follow him through Jesus, they will find that he does deliver. God is a delivering God. He delivers through the difficulties of life. Okay, it doesn't mean we won't have difficulties in life. We will. But he will help us through them. He delivers through the difficulties of life. And ultimately, most importantly, he delivers us from the judgment that we deserve because of our sin through Jesus Christ. God is a delivering God. Okay, this is good news. This is the good news that we know in Christ, isn't it? Jesus has beaten every obstacle. He's beaten even sin. He's conquered even sin at the cross. And so we can trust a God who is a delivering God. And we can have the confidence to follow him, even when that means going against the flow. God is a delivering.